Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hunting Magic Eels, Recovering an Enchanted Faith in a Skeptical Age, by Richard Beck. Narrated by William Saris. Introduction. Strange Sights. We were hunting for magic eels. That's an odd opening for a conversation about revitalizing Christian faith in our secular, skeptical age, but stay with me. The magic eels, or to be more precise, the legend concerning them, are from Wales, where we were on holiday with our dear friend Hannah. We were visiting Llanduwin Island, exploring the ruins of the abbey associated with St. Dwynwen. St. Dwynwen was a 5th-century Celtic saint, and is the patron saint of lovers in Wales. Celebrated on January 25th, St. Dwynwen's Day is the Welsh version of St. Valentine's Day. Llanduwin Island was a famous site of pilgrimage because of its holy well. Inhabiting the well were enchanted eels that could predict your romantic future. According to the legend, if the eels disturbed a token thrown into the well, your lover would be faithful for life. Not surprisingly, the church became very wealthy due to all the pilgrimages. Who needs premarital counseling when you've got magic eels? Pilgrimages to Llanduwin Island began to decline after the Protestant Reformation. Today, St. Dwynwen's church is a ruin, and sadly, there is no longer a well with magic eels. Things have changed a lot over the last 500 years. I want to talk about these changes and their impact on faith in a world increasingly dominated by skepticism, doubt, and disbelief. We don't make pilgrimages to holy wells anymore to pray for our marriages. A world stuffed with supernatural wonders seems to be a thing of the past. Our world is secular, skeptical, and scientific. 500 years ago, life was enchanted. God existed, and the devil was real. The world teemed with angels and demons. There were magical creatures and dark occult forces. It was a world of holy wells and magic eels. But with the Protestant Reformation and the beginning of the Enlightenment, the world, in the West at least, has grown increasingly disenchanted. We live in a world dominated by science and technology. Increasing numbers of us don't believe in God anymore, to say nothing about believing in the devil or angels. We don't expect miracles. We know that stage magicians aren't sorcerers, that there are rational explanations behind their tricks and illusions. The world of St. Dwynwen is viewed as quirky and quaint, but also naive and superstitious. We've grown up and left those fairy tales behind. Rates of agnosticism and atheism in the United States have been steadily, if slowly, increasing, especially among the young and college-educated. There's also the rise of the nuns, people who no longer formally identify with any religious tradition. Our public sphere is increasingly described as secular and post-Christian. This rising tide of disenchantment has profoundly affected our religious imaginations. We've lost our capacity for enchantment, our ability to see and experience God as a living, vital presence in our lives. As Thomas Merton once observed in a talk he gave on August 20, 1965, life is this simple. We are living in a world that is absolutely transparent, and God is shining through it all the time. This is not just a fable or a nice story. It is true. If we abandon ourselves to God and forget ourselves, we see it sometimes, and we see it maybe frequently. God manifests Himself everywhere, in everything. In people, and in things, and in nature, and in events. It becomes very obvious that He is everywhere and in everything, and we cannot be without Him. You cannot be without God. It's impossible. It's simply impossible. The only thing is that we don't see it. God is everywhere, but we don't see it. This pervasive disenchantment, which affects Christians as much as non-believers, poses the single greatest threat to faith and the church in our post-Christian world. How we lost our ability to see God, why we need to recover it, and how we can do that is what I want to share with you. In his book, The Pastor in a Secular Age, Ministry to People Who No Longer Need a God, Andrew Root describes our eroding capacity for enchantment as a form of attention blindness. Root uses the famous gorilla experiment from the psychologist Daniel Simons to make the point. You've likely seen the YouTube clip of the gorilla experiment. At the start of the video, you're asked to pay attention to two teams of people passing a basketball back and forth, with the instructions to count how many passes occur. You dutifully do so. And then, at the end of the video, you're asked if you noticed the dancing gorilla. You're a bit shocked by that question. You've seen no gorilla, only people passing a ball back and forth. But the video rewinds and replays, and lo and behold, there in the middle of the passing teams is a dancing gorilla, as plain as day. How could you have missed such an obvious thing? We miss the obvious, according to Daniel Simons, because when our attention becomes focused on one part of reality, like counting the passes between the teams, we miss other, even very obvious, aspects of life, like a dancing gorilla. Our attention helps us see, but it also blinds us. According to Root, this is what has been happening in our skeptical age. For 500 years, technology and science have been grabbing and focusing our attention, for very good reasons. We have been awed and blessed by the achievements of science and technology, but this attention to science and technology has hidden other obvious facts about our lives and world. We've been counting the passes between team science and team technology, and lost sight of God, the dancing gorilla, right in front of us. Modern disenchantment is due to this attention blindness. As Root writes, in the modern era, our attention has been drawn away from what our ancestors thought was obvious, that a personal God acts and moves in the world. Some would say this movement represents liberation. We've put aside an untenable belief. Instead, what we've acquired is a unique observation blindness. It's not that we've given up an untenable belief, but that our secular age has drawn our attention away from divine action and towards something else. New forms of attention make us unable to see what was once obvious. We think religion is a matter of belief. Root points out that something deeper and more fundamental is going on. Faith is a matter of perception. Faith isn't forcing yourself to believe in unbelievable things. Faith is overcoming attentional blindness. Phrased differently, faith is about enchantment, or rather, a re-enchantment, the intentional recovery of a holy capacity to see and experience God in the world. Without this ability, pervasive cultural disenchantment erodes our faith, and we're seeing the effects all around us, in our homes, in pews, and in the culture at large. How enchantment flows out of perceptual intention and attention is wonderfully illustrated in Genesis in the story of Moses and the burning bush. After his flight from Egypt, Moses is tending his father-in-law's sheep in the middle of the desert near Mount Horeb. There, in the middle of nowhere, he catches sight of a bush that's caught fire. Strangely, the bush isn't being burnt up. Intrigued and fascinated, Moses says, "I must turn aside and see this strange sight." I must turn aside. This is the key point. Encountering God's presence requires a shift of attention. Moses must intentionally direct his attention to behold the strange sight. We must as well in this skeptical age. God is there, but we're going to have to retrain ourselves to see. I like how Marilyn Robinson describes this in her novel Gilead. "It has seemed to me sometimes as though the Lord breathes on this poor gray ember of creation and it turns to radiance, for a moment or a year or the span of a life. And then it sinks back into itself again, and to look at it, no one would know it had anything to do with fire or light. Wherever you turn your eyes, the world can shine like transfiguration. You don't have to bring a thing to it except a little willingness to see." Enchantment starts with this willingness to see. As the Christian mystic Simone Weil said, attention is the only faculty of the soul that gives access to God. Disenchantment isn't about disbelief. Disenchantment is a failure to attend. As a college professor at a Christian university, I witnessed the effects of disenchantment up close in my classrooms. Most of my students think, and likely you do as well, that the entire point of being a Christian is to be a good person. My progressive and conservative students each have their own visions about what this good person should look like. Regardless, when faith is reduced to moral or political performance, life with God is stripped of its strange, startling, sacred magic. Faith becomes being a good neighbor and voting well. And I don't disagree. Being a good person is a huge part of following Jesus, and I'm even comfortable saying it's the most important part. But more is required to sustain our vision of goodness decade after decade, especially when the work becomes costly and inconvenient, or when we face failure and disillusionment. Beyond goodness, there is also the pressing problem that morality and politics do not heal the deep pain we're experiencing in the modern world. Anxiety, depression, addiction, loneliness, and suicide are all on the rise. My students are very good people. They are kind, tolerant, environmentally conscientious, and justice-minded. But they are also very unhappy, anxious, and lonely. Something in this skeptical age is hurting them. And not just them, we're all feeling lost and unwell. I call this the ache, and I spend time with my students, as I will with you, mapping the contours of this pain. The ache is the photographic negative of enchantment, the hole that's been left in our lives because we've turned our attention away from God. The ache is our disenchantment with disenchantment, our doubts about our doubts, our skepticism about being so skeptical. Perhaps paradoxically, exploring the ache is often the first step back toward enchantment. It's like a doctor testing an injured limb, moving it tentatively, and asking, "Does this hurt?" We'll do the same as we walk across the landscape of disenchantment, asking, "Does this hurt?" Because disenchantment does hurt. Something we need is missing from our lives, and we're feeling the pain. What's missing is enchantment. For my students, disenchantment reduces their faith to morality or political action, but morality and politics don't heal the ache, not fully or completely. An enchanted faith is, by contrast, a wonder and joy-filled adventure with God, opening the wardrobe door and finding yourself in Narnia. As Anne Lamott says, our prayers keep bumping into three big words: thanks, help, and wow. These three words are prayers of enchantment, expressions of gratitude, dependence, and hope. This is the magic that sustains and empowers our moral and political efforts across our lifespan. This is the enchantment that begins to heal the ache. Faith is more than moral self-improvement and election year drama. Faith is a romance, a meeting with, in the words of Dante, the love that moves the sun and other stars. Our moral alignment with this love is, of course, a huge part of the story. But it's the burning bush encounter with God that vitalizes, animates, excites, and sustains our faith. True, these experiences may be fleeting and elusive, isolated and unpredictable, like thunderclaps in a long, dark night, but they form the bedrock of Christian life. Ask anyone who has carried their faith over many decades about how they have done so. They have not been forcing themselves to believe in unbelievable things. Rather, the doggedly faithful will share stories about burning bush moments in their lives when they bumped into God, encountering a love and mystery beyond words and descriptions. These strange sights are not flights of fantasy or wishful thinking. They are the most reality-filled moments of our lives, the truest things we have ever experienced. These mystical encounters, as rare as they may be, are the foundations of faith. Sometimes these moments are dramatic and clear, like Paul's encounter with Jesus on the road to Damascus. But for myself and many others, these enchanted moments have been more soft, quiet, and subtle. I have never heard the voice of God speaking audibly to me or seen a vision, but I have seen the world shine like transfiguration. I've had experiences like the one that transformed the life of the Catholic monk and writer Thomas Merton. On March 18, 1958, Merton was in Louisville, Kentucky for an appointment. He was standing on the corner of 4th and Walnut, looking at all the busy people bustling around him, shopping and working. And there, standing on that busy corner, enchantment happened. God breathes on the gray ember of the world, and it glows. Merton shared what he saw that day. In Louisville, at the corner of 4th and Walnut, in the center of the shopping district, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all those people, that they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another, even though we were total strangers. It was like waking from a dream. This sense of liberation from an illusory difference was such a relief and such a joy to me that I almost laughed out loud. I have the immense joy of being man, a member of a race in which God Himself became incarnate. As if the sorrows and stupidities of the human condition could overwhelm me, now I realize what we all are. And if only everybody could realize this. But it cannot be explained. There is no way of telling people that they are all walking around shining like the sun. On that busy street corner, Merton saw the strange sight. He didn't hear the voice of God from the sky or see a vision of angels. He saw the world shine like transfiguration. That is what enchantment has felt like for me. Enchantment hasn't been the supernatural vision, but the surprising rush of joy and love, enjoying the gift of a sunrise, bearing witness to a small act of kindness, watching the breeze dancing on the branches of a tree, or seeing the person standing right in front of you, shining like the sun. I've seen the world, if only briefly and in my peripheral vision, light up with fire. I expect you have as well. The big encouragement I have for all of us living in this skeptical age is simply this: more. Let's open our eyes to see more. Before moving on to the good stuff, let's pause to address three possible questions or objections that you might be having right here at the start. First, why resort to fancy, unfamiliar terms like enchantment and disenchantment when it would be much simpler to speak of belief versus disbelief? Because isn't that what we're really talking about? Actually, no, we're not. The issue is the difference between belief and experience. Belief is intellectual assent and agreement with the doctrinal propositions of faith. Experience exists prior to and drives belief. Experience gives birth to belief. It's hard to believe in God if belief isn't naming something in our lives, something we've felt, sensed, seen, or intuited. As the Christian mystical tradition teaches us, life with God is more about knowing than believing. The mystics didn't believe in God, they encountered God. So it's crazy to demand or expect beliefs from people, or ourselves, where there is no experience. Without an experience of God, belief has no content, no reference, no object, no way to get to yes. Demanding belief without experience is asking people to believe in nothing, for the word God would be hanging in thin air, pointing to a gaping hole in a person's life. Belief without experience is an empty bucket, making it a very useless, discardable thing. But if there's water in the bucket, if our beliefs are carrying precious experiences of thanks, help, and wow, well, you're going to hold on to that bucket for fear of spilling the water, especially if you're standing in the middle of a disenchanted desert dying of thirst. I'd like us to spend less time talking about the bucket and start filling it with water. A second question you might be asking is, are we really as disenchanted as I've been making it out? People still believe in strange supernatural stuff. It could be that we're not growing more disenchanted, but that we're undergoing a change in enchantments. For example, Stephen Asma describes modern supernatural beliefs in his book, Why We Need Religion. Asma notes that his sophisticated university students frequently scoff at the view of science they see displayed in the many creationist museums sprinkled across America, each devoted to preaching a literal reading of Genesis against the reigning scientific consensus. In their dismissal of a literal reading of the Bible's creation story, Asma's students seem to be perfect examples of modern, secular disenchantment. Science rules. But that's not quite the case, as Asma goes on to observe. But now it gets interesting. My students believe in ghosts. It's not just a few students or an odd cohort that believe in ghosts. It's a vast majority. Over the last decade, I have informally polled my students and discovered that around 80% of them believe in ghosts. If you are surprised to find such a high number of ghost believers, you might also be alarmed to discover that almost half of my students also believe in astrology. Much has been made recently of the non-religious nature of the millennials, given that they self-identify as unaffiliated when polls ask them about religion. They are indeed disaffected about organized institutional religion, but we would be mistaken if we read this as an Enlightenment-style triumph of scientific literacy. They are devoted to mysticism, supernaturalism, and pseudoscience, and the same students who think the idea of heaven and hell is ridiculous see karma and reincarnation as manifestly obvious. Maybe we aren't as disenchanted as we appear to be. Some have called this the myth of disenchantment, arguing that modern people are as enchanted as they have always been. I don't think it's quite that simple. Disenchantment isn't a myth. It's a huge and growing force in Europe and America. Magic eel tourism has been on the decline for quite a while now, but it is true that the spiritual landscape is complicated and diverse. Disenchantment has been on the rise for the last 500 years, but as Asma's students illustrate, enchantment remains a powerful force. Consequently, what is often taken as evidence for disenchantment might actually be a shifting of enchantments. We can describe this shift as a movement away from a religious enchantment toward a spiritual enchantment, creating the growing spiritual but not religious phenomenon. By religious enchantment, I mean an encounter with sacred transcendence, God existing outside, above, and beyond the cosmos. By spiritual enchantment, I mean, as Stephen Smith describes in his book Pagans and Christians in the City, an imminent encounter with the sacred, the divine, located within creation itself. For our conversation, disenchantment names both the rise of unbelief generally, along with a movement away from a religious enchantment, an encounter with a transcendent creator. Which brings us to a final concern. Obviously, there isn't one type of enchantment. There are enchantments that Christians should be worried about and avoid. So, when we speak of re-enchanting faith, we need to attend to the potential for misenchantment. For example, whenever I, as a psychologist, discuss the importance of experience in our faith, my theologian friends light their hair on fire. The fear is that if we lean too heavily on our experiences, our faith will be blown out by our whims and fancies. And that's absolutely true. Experience must be checked, or all sorts of bad things can happen. We need to discern the spirits and heed the exhortation of 1 John chapter 4, verse 1. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God. You and I will kick the tires of the various enchantments on offer in the world in order to separate God's enchantment from the kooky, the dangerous, and the self-indulgent. Preliminaries now out of the way, let me say I think Thomas Merton got it exactly right. God is everywhere and in everything, and we cannot be without Him. It's simply impossible. but we have some vision problems. So join me on a journey to re-enchant our faith in this skeptical age. Let's turn aside to see the strange sights. Burning like transfiguration, the world is full of fire and light. God is there, right in front of you, dancing. All you need to do is bring a little willingness to see. Part 1. Attention Blindness. 1. The Slow Death of God. In U.S., decline of Christianity continues at rapid pace. So blared the headline of a report released by the Pew Research Center in October of 2019. Buried in the report was a shocking revelation. According to Pew, in 2019, 84% of the silent generation, those born between 1928 and 1945, identified as Christians. So did 76% of the baby boomers, born between 1946 and 1964. But less than half of the millennial generation, those born in the 1980s and 1990s, identified as Christian, 49%, while 40% of millennials identified as nothing in particular, the religious nuns. This is a wake-up call for the church. For the first time in the history of the United States, there is a generation the majority of whom don't identify as Christian. And these generational trends are just one part of the larger story in the United States concerning the decline of Christianity and religious belief. For example, in 2019, Americans who described their religious identity as atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular increased to 26% of the total population, up from 17% in 2009. And these rates of unbelief are accelerating with each successive generation. God is dead, declared the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. I don't think God is dead yet, but God is most definitely on life support. I want to tell you the story about the slow death of God in the West, how a world once filled with magic and miracles became disbelieving and doubting. It is a story with some surprising twists and turns. While sad, this is a story you need to hear. Somehow, somewhere, we lost our way. Let's stop, retrace our steps, and figure out where we made the wrong turns. As I've shared, 500 years ago, we lived in an enchanted world. The existence of God was taken for granted. Of course, God existed. There was a heaven and there was a hell, and everything you did pointed you toward one destination or the other. 500 years ago, in the words of 1 Peter chapter 5, the devil prowled the world like a hungry lion, seeking souls to tempt and devour. If not the devil, then his minions, the hordes of demons that would afflict, injure, trick, tempt, lure, harm, and even possess hapless humans. But the faithful were not defenseless. Angels guarded and protected, along with the saints in heaven. Prayers petitioned divine aid and assistance. Visions and heavenly visitations gave guidance, support, and protection. Miracles were the norm, and supernatural wonders abounded. On the edges of Christianity, and bleeding into it in ways that made them impossible to separate, were the enchantments of the pagan world. Life was filled with spells, curses, talismans, potions, magic, and superstitions. There were witches, ghosts, and creatures that haunted the night. But that's not our world. Our world is disenchanted. Science has replaced superstition. To be sure, religious belief hasn't vanished, and the world remains supernatural and spooky in many ways. But people today do regularly doubt the existence of God, and rates of atheism and agnosticism continue to climb. We demand hard facts, data, and evidence. We revel in skepticism. Nothing is true for us until a scientist shows up. And for good reason. The gifts of modern medicine and technology are life-giving and awe-inspiring. The ancients thought the earth was flat. We've put a man on the moon.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?